The Brewing Network is proud to present Beer Radio, that turns ordinary homebrew into award-winning beer. The Jameel Show. And now, your hosts, Jameel Zainasheff and John Plisse.
Welcome, my brewing brothers and sisters, to the show. I'm Jameel Zainasheff. Hey, John, how you doing?
Great. How are you? Good morning.
All right. And today we are talking about dry stout. So not that real heavy, high alcohol stout, but the kind you get on draft in Ireland or various
drinking
other places. Like a Guinness.
Like a Guinness.
Like a Guinness. So the reason this show is coming on this time of year is if you brew a dry stout now.
Oh, yeah, St. Patty's.
It'll be ready for St. Patty's.
There you go.
Which is much better than green beer.
Hell yeah.
If you want to enjoy St. Patty's Day like some people do. You like St. Patty's Day, Justin?
You know, I've shied away from St. Patty's Day because I just, when I was a kid, I got terrible memories of it. I was a little out of control.
When you were a kid? How old?
Yeah, I was in high school. It was, my last year in high school. Thing is, you know, even then, I always knew I wanted to do broadcasting or public speaking or something. So I was pretty heavily into the dorky stuff then, like, you know, debate team and all that kind of stuff. And it just sucks that St. Paddy's Day happens to fall right before a state finals and that sort of thing when I was about to go to the state competition. And, you know, St. Paddy's Day, you got to have a couple beers, right? So we started at like 6 a.m. and just drinking whatever.
Wow.
And I was so, you know, like contradicting myself. I was so dedicated to public speaking and doing that thing, but I was also pretty dedicated to drinking.
Yeah.
I was drinking in the morning and then decided I still had to go to class to practice my speeches for the upcoming state competition. Actually drove myself to school.
Oh, no.
Which is what got me in trouble. I made it to school, made it into the parking lot and parked, but, somehow was seen by, like, you know, everybody in school was like, what is happening with this car? I guess I was just all over the parking lot. So I was, I parked, got out of my car, was walking up to class, had big four-leaf clover sunglasses on, big green sunglasses. I mean, I was wearing a sign that said, I'm drunk, bust me.
Yeah.
Got arrested.
Oh, wow.
And suspended, couldn't go to the state competition. It was my last year to do it. Ended up a failure and a bartender after that. So I have since shied away from St. Patty's Day.
Yeah. So you're going to be brewing a dry stout, huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
Next one, right?
I'm jumping back on the horse this year.
Yeah. That's a great story. Top that one, Jay-Z.
Yeah, that is a good story.
Yeah.
No arrests in my, recently. Or no arrests for alcohol in my history.
But you have been arrested before?
Anyways, dry stout.
Don't say it.
It's a good story.
I'll quote you.
Dry stout is like, so a lot of people have had Guinness.
Mm-hmm.
Just about everyone has, I think. Anyone that's into beer or craft beer has tried Guinness or similar. Murphy's is another stout, similar. Beamish, there's a couple of others, and those are pretty traditional. If you're going to be brewing a dry stout, you have some choices as to how much alcohol is going to go in it. So the ones that are on draught in Europe and other places like that, that's going to be a lower alcohol. You're going to get an alcohol percentage in the, you know, 4% range or so.
Makes it easy drinking.
Easy drinking. You can drink a lot. Again, it's that session beer. It's the beer that you go in and you can have, you know, half a dozen. You're not gonna be drinking half a dozen of something that's 6 or 7% alcohol. And when they bottle that and you get that in bottles in certain places, it's going to be a higher alcohol. It's going to be that foreign extra stout a lot of times. So they've raised the alcohol level and the bitterness to let that beer travel better.
But that's like a 5-7% beer, right?
Yeah.
Before next round.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So dry stout, if you're making it for draught, as they call it.
Draught, not draft?
Yes. Draught is going to
Meant to say that. I was like, what?
Exactly.
Okay.
Is going to be, you know, around the 4% mark. And this is the same thing they serve on nitrogen is common. And that's what gives it that really creamy head and that cascading waterfall thing in the glass when they pull a pint of Guinness
or black stuff, right?
Right. Yeah. So the aroma of a dry stout is real coffee-like. Lots of roasted barley. There are some malt aromas, but it's not going to be really fruity or hoppy or anything like that. It should be clean and coffee-like and roasty, some malt background.
A lot of roasty character? Or
a lot of roasty
really?
Character,
okay.
Yeah. So and that roasty character will be, you know, coffee, chocolate, toasty. You know, roasty takes on a lot of different levels and characteristics throughout that. And it's going to be quite dark black. It should be black. It shouldn't be
brown.
You know, sometimes it's brown, you know. But for me, when you're making a stout, it should be pretty close to jet black.
Mm-hmm.
Thick, creamy head, especially if you're going to serve with nitrogen. You could buy beer gas, which is the mix of...
I think it's 70 nitrogen, 30 CO2.
Yes, around in there, 75, 25, something like that.
They call it beer gas mix.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And you can get that, and you can hook up. You can get Guinness faucets. If you're really into Guinness and dry stouts, you know, it might be worth getting yourself a Guinness faucet and some beer gas and serving it up that way.
See, I think that makes give you that huge, big head. Huge difference on the beer. How it's served, how it tastes.
Oh, absolutely. You know? Yeah, you're 100% right.
Can't CO2 add... over bitterness or astringency issue to the roasted malt in your beer?
Right. And something with so much roasty, if you add a lot of carbonic bite to it with a lot of CO2, it can become, you know, really harsh. And that's one of the keys to making a good version of this, since there is, to get that intense roast, if you carbonated that, you know, to 2.5 volumes like, certain types of American ales,
too much.
It's too much, and it becomes real biting and kind of harsh. And if you back down on it, it becomes creamier and more chocolatey, coffee-like, and richer. So the flavors, you're going to be looking for those, again, coffee-like, roasty flavors. And
bittersweet cocoa?
Bittersweet cocoa, that's a good descriptor as well. And it'll you want to kind of get something with a dry finish. A lot of that roast will give you a dry finish. You don't want a lot of like crystal flavors or sweet caramelly flavors in there. A lot of home brews that I taste for dry stout have a lot of caramel in them,
High crystal.
Yeah, you know, and they add too much of that.
Okay,
and it just becomes sweet, and it's a little off. If you have a Guinness, it's dry and it's clean and it doesn't have all that sweetness to it. It even has a sour note. They add a little bit of sour malt to that to kind of tang it up a little bit.
Have you ever heard of them adding like Brett to their ferment or a little spike of bacteria of some sort?
No, I know people have all sorts of theories on this, and I've heard that, you know, they make the Guinness magic extract, which they send out to the various breweries that brew Guinness around the world, and so that's made, and it's got some souring in it, and the color, and the breweries brew some.
This is all theory, then.
Pale whatever, and then they pour this in. I don't really know.
Okay.
As far as mouthfeel, again, it should be creamy. You're going to have a high hot bitterness. A dry stout is pretty darn bitter. People don't realize, and it's not going to have a lot of hot flavor or aroma, though.
Like an English bitter or an American style bittering?
Like an English style bittering, but bitter, like 37 IBUs or so.
Really?
Anywhere between 30 and 45 IBUs is what the BJCP says, but you know, around middle of that, about 37 IBUs for a dry stout for a Guinness.
Wow, looks like I screwed that one up.
So that's pretty darn bitter.
That is very bitter.
You know, like a American pale ale.
Yeah, for such a low gravity beer, I mean, that's a lot of hops.
Exactly. Wow. Yeah, and that makes it bitter, but it blends in there really well, and done right, it's a very drinkable, you know, pint after pint type of beer. You can take big swallows of it and drink quite a lot. So overall, it's a very dark, very roasty, very bitter, very creamy ale.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Correct.
So the dryness is mainly from two things. One is the roasted barley. So it's not roasted malt, but roasted barley. They take barley, they don't even malt it. They just roast the daylights out of it, right?
And
it gives you a different flavor. I'm not sure what the temperature is, but they roast them pretty dark, you know, in the 500 to 600 level bond range.
Wow. Okay.
So it's almost like charcoal. And then that and the low finishing gravity. So you're going to finish anywhere, you know, in the 7 to 10, 7 to 11 range, 10, 7, 10, 11. And that's going to end up being pretty dry.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, lower carbonation, because if you have too much carbonation, it's going to be acidic and burning and harsh. If you lower it down, like we were talking about in the Ordinary Bitter Show, lowering it down actually makes the beer a little more creamy. And if you want the big head on it, you add the nitrogen and get that Guinness giant head, but without all the carbonic bite.
If a home brewer was bottle conditioning, would you have any recommendations? How would they undershoot their corn sugar that they were using a little bit? Or
I would carbonate it less. So if you're putting in 3/4 cup for, you know, 5 gallons of American pale ale, does that sound about right?
That's 4 ounces. Yeah.
And then I would cut that in half.
Okay.
For something like this,
makes sense.
And, you know, don't overdo it that way.
We keep saying creamy in the style of beer. What type of ingredient actually contributes to that?
A lot of it, it has to do with the residual dextrins in the beer. So the malt itself, the mash temperature plays a big part in that. Any protein rest, the amount of protein in there. A lot of various things, but mainly the residual dextrins in there.
Okay.
When you're making a dry stout, mash temperature be perhaps 152 Fahrenheit.
Not your 154 sweet spot?
No, not my 154 sweet spot. You're talking about my sweet spot again, right? So about 152 Fahrenheit, 66 to 67 centigrade.
Okay.
And that'll give you a nice amount of residual body. You can go higher, you can go lower. You know, start at 152, brew it, and as you brew it, if you think you need more body, less body, you can, you know, adjust your temperature in your following batches.
I did have a question about that from the chat room already. CJ is in the chat room, and you can join us in the chat room, by the way, too, if you want to ask questions to Jamil, I'll take them. But yeah, he wanted to know about how you got that creamy mouthfeel, too. Says that he mashes at 145 to 148. And it turns out really dry and even somewhat astringent, his stout. So you're saying up that temp?
Yeah, at 145 to 148, it's going to end up really dry.
Okay.
And there's not going to be a lot of body left.
Okay.
So you have to, and in a low-gravity beer, mm-hmm. you have to up your mash temperature to leave enough residuals there to give some body. That's okay. Why when people are making low-alcohol beers, you gotta up the mash temp to give you something to feel as you're drinking.
Okay. So you said 154 is a nice target?
152.
Oh, okay. All right. Anything over 154 would be way too hot?
No, it depends. You know, start out with 152.
Okay.
See how that works for you. Because, again, you do want it to not be too thick. You want it to be kind of dry and easy drinking.
Okay.
So it's a balancing act. So I would start around 152 to 154 in that range, and I think you'd be just fine.
What about roasted malt versus black patten? Is it not the style, or?
Well, the style traditionally uses roasted malt.
Okay.
So you can use black patten as well. It's a somewhat different flavor. The other thing you can add to get some of that creaminess and to help with the head is flaked barley. And flaked barley will leave a lot of beta glucans, which is kind of gummy.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll add a lot of body and chewiness to the beer and will help with the head. So flaked barley is a good addition.
What about flaked wheat or flaked oats?
You could do the same. And there's also an oatmeal stout where you can add oats as well. Although it takes a pretty high percentage to make be noticeable with oats. But flaked barley is traditional. So a traditional grain bill is pale malt, about 70%, roasted barley, 10%, and flaked barley, 20%. That mash at 152, you're shooting for 37 IBUs and, you know, about a 1-to-1 gravity IBU ratio, 1038, 1040, and 37 IBUs. So about a 1-to-1 ratio on the bittering. And you're going to ferment out with an Irish ale yeast or an English ale yeast or even a California ale yeast.
Can an English yeast get that dry?
They can. Again, it's going to depend a lot on mash temperature. Okay. So if you gave a English ale yeast pure sucrose to ferment,
it can get down to
it'll ferment it all out. Wow. It'll have 100% attenuation. If you give it the various, somebody was asking about how they get the attenuation ranges for like Y yeast and White Labs and how they do that. What they do is they have a lab version of a typical beer wort. And they make that up, and it's got a typical amount of dextrins, a typical amount of the various sugars, typical amounts of, various things, melanoidins and such. And they ferment that out with their yeast and to see that the yeast is always within a certain range. And before they grow up batches, they test each one to make sure that, they're giving you a very reproducible yeast each time.
Wow.
So that's why, they have those ranges, and that's a typical wort. If you change your wort from that, you can get English ale yeast to attenuate more than, 65 to 70%. You can get California ale yeast to attenuate, less than, 75%. So it's all those. It's always a range based on what it's trying to ferment, the health of the yeast, a lot of different things like that.
So you're then, wow, that's a trip. I'm sorry. That was a little lesson 101 from you, JC. mash temperature then affecting attenuation and fermentation.
Right.
Wow.
So the higher the mash temp, you get different enzymes working. You're going to get the longer chain sugars, which the yeast cannot ferment as easy.
What about flavor impact, though? I mean, certain grains, let's say you're doing a dry stout and you're at a higher mash temperature, you're going to have more unfermentables.
Right.
But the yeasts are going to, you're going to have higher temps, you're going to get maybe more astringency out from your grains, maybe? So I worry about flavor impact.
No, not really. You're not going to get tannins extracted from the grains unless your pH is messed up. So if you're in the 5.2 to 5.6 range or so with your pH and your mash, you're going to get very little tannin extraction. It's not an issue. I mean, you have to get really hot to do that. I mean, if you're in the 150 to 160 range or 145 to 162 range that the enzymes are active, You're not gonna have a problem with astringency from that, really.
I brewed a stout once, and I used that 5.2 salt stuff, and I did the dosage, and it was way too astringent. So I cut it back by half.
Yeah.
But what about you're bringing up pH? I mean, if you have too low pH with these type of grains, couldn't you get astringency issues because they're more acidic?
No, the acid does play a part in it, but the grains themselves, dark roasted grains, will pull down the pH of the mash. So I wouldn't do a lot of adjusting of the water. Guinness is brewed with a moderate carbonate water. You don't want really high carbonates. You want a lot of salts in there. Just, try your tap water and see how well it works. And with this amount of roasted grains, it generally will pull, as long as you have water that's kind of close to neutral, it'll pull it down into the 5 range with this amount of roasted grains. One thing to be careful of, when you're brewing low-gravity beers like an ordinary bitter or a dry stout, it can be tricky to get the right gravity when you're boiling something like this. and you're working with that low grains of this low an amount of extract. And again, with extract, brewers use a pale malt and specialty grains. Don't use the dark extracts.
Right, you're going to steep it.
Right, exactly, and steep your grains. But one thing is tricky is doing the boil. And what I find really useful is a refractometer, because you only need a few drops for a refractometer to get a good reading. And what I like to do is take, you know, same syringe you might use for shooting heroin or crack. You can use those are perfect for grabbing yourself a small sample from the boil kettle. You put that on your refractometer. Works out great.
Can't you just actually dip it into your boil, the one with ATCs?
Oh, no, I would not dip your refractometer because it's going to get all gummed up and stuff, and the steam coming off the boil kettle will get in the works, and you're going to screw up your refractometer.
Okay.
So, you know, take your crack syringe and, you know, use that to draw out a sample. It's perfect because, you know, you're not using the big chubby syringes for that. You use the little petite ones.
Right.
That's just right for using with the refractometer.
So you take a pre-boil gravity, and then do you ever take a gravity halfway between?
Yeah, actually, I rarely take the pre-boil because I know how my mash tun works and that everything's fine. And usually when I take it is I kind of break the boil up into thirds. So a 90-minute boil, 30 minutes in, my bittering hops go in. Another 30 minutes in, I start worrying about getting my chiller sanitized that's when I'll get, I'll put the chiller in and I'll take a sample. When, you know, the boil slows down, I'll take a sample and I'll put that on the refractometer. I'll say, okay, well, in an hour, I've reduced my volume by this much.
Right.
And, you know, I've gotten to this. I know where my starting should have been. I come down to this. In 30 minutes, in half again, will I end up with, you know, I should end up with this if I continue the same amount of boil. And if not, I'll increase the boil a little bit or I'll turn it down a little bit.
Wow.
So that'll end up being, you know, real close to where I need to be, and it's real, real helpful. All right. So after the break, we'll get more into making your wort for dry stout and how to brew them and ferment them. And we'll be right back.
This is the Jameel Show.
Welcome back.
Yes.
And those of you listening and not in the chat room, go to the Brewing Network main page, hit the chat, and you can get in there, join your brewing brothers and sisters, and discuss this fine style of dry stout. I know they're having a good time in there, and there's at least half of you aren't in the chat.
So get in there.
Joining in. Yeah, get in there. Have some fun. Ask some questions. All right, we're talking about dry stout, and now we're going to get into more details of the recipe and brewing the yeast techniques, yeasts.
We already kind of talked about flaked oats and stuff.
Right.
But type of hops.
Hops. I like East Kent Goldings for anything British or Irish or anything along those lines. East Kent Goldings is really, really the hop to use. You can use a lot of different hops. Your target is just clean bittering in general. There isn't a whole lot of hop flavor.
What about aroma?
Or aroma in an Irish dry stout. If you want to Americanize it, you can go ahead and toss in, you know, some Cascades or some Crystal hops or Centennial or whatever you want and jazz it up and do all that. But if you're trying to make a traditional dry stout and you're trying to win competitions, East Kent Goldings is it.
That's
and just do the one bittering addition and, you know, 37 IBUs, East Kent Goldings. You could use something else that's clean and higher alpha if you wanted. You know, there are some other English hops that will work well, but East Kent Goldings, I buy a big sack of
like
East
pounds
Kent
worth.
Goldings. I'll get a couple of pounds of East Kent Goldings, and I'll use that in all my British beers.
Okay.
And that's it. And, you know, one large sack will
serve you
keep
well.
You well. So, yeah. Nice big sack.
So for a 5-gallon extract or an all-grain recipe, what would your hop additions be?
I would just do one 60-minute addition for 37 IBUs.
And that's it?
That's it.
1 ounce, 2 ounce?
Well, you know, it depends. It's going to be dependent on the alpha acid, so it's going to be like 1.5 ounces or what for a 5-gallon batch. But you're going to keep that bittering ratio to gravity ratio. So if you want to make it a little more alcohol and you want to get up to, you know, 1050, you'd go closer to, you know, 45 IBUs or so. Mm-hmm. If you're going to be down in the 1030s in your original gravity, you're going to get your IBUs down into the lower 30s. Mm-hmm. So about 1-to-1 on the gravity bittering ratio.
Okay. We talked about roasted barley a little bit. Back mm-hmm. patent. What about chocolate or carafe for coloring?
Well, and you can use those. The carafe, if you use regular carafe with the husk, is the same thing in a lot of ways as a chocolate malt or roasted. They have various color levels, 1, 2, 3, 4, and those are all different color levels, roasting levels of the carafe malt. If you get carafe special, it doesn't have a husk, and it's not going to have the roasty characters.
Okay.
The husk brings out a lot of the roasty characters. So you wouldn't want to use the carafe special unless you're just using it to kind of color it up a little bit. But if you're using roast barley and all that, that'll color it up just fine. The addition of chocolate malt, things like that, you can't. The traditional recipe is very, you know, roast barley, pale malt, and flake barley, and that's it.
Yeah.
But the you know, when the nice thing about adding a chocolate malt is that it will help fill out kind of that roasted palate.
Hmm.
So you can add some extra dimension there and some extra kind of range to the chocolate flavors. So chocolate malt, believe it or not, is a little more toasty than roasted malt. So there's actually some more biscuity, toasty, bready bits in there.
Well, the style talks about, you know, that cocoa flavor. So you
right.
think you'd want a small percentage of chocolate in it.
Sure.
Well,
and you know, the flavors are really interesting. You can, you know, with roast malt, believe it or not, you can get flavors like cinnamon. You can get, you know, just the, it's amazing how graham crackers,
yeah.
It's amazing how complex it is. And
what about licorice?
Licorice, you know, I wouldn't add any, but you can get licorice flavors from them, absolutely. You know, it's amazing how the flavors with the alcohols and the esters and mm-hmm. the yeasts and all that play together and get you these different characters. One of the things that I think everyone might want to consider is using an English pale malt as the base grain.
Why is that?
That's going to give you some of those biscuity, toasty characters and a little bit more character than you would from just a domestic two-row.
It's got a lot more body, too.
Filmed. Yeah.
Well, we're talking about dry stout, so.
Right. And it, that's really dependent on the mash temperature
right.
as well. But if you bring with extract, you know, get yourself the Maris Otter extract, English pale, English light mm-hmm. extract. Several of the homebrew shops sell it. And that's a good base, and use steeping grains. This is a nice style for extract brewers because, you know, you can steep those grains and the beer turns out really well.
Well, for steeping for an extract brewer, doesn't flake barley need a base malt to convert?
Well, you could go without the flake barley. The flake
okay.
barley, the flaking gelatinizes it already.
Okay.
And then, you know, yeah.
You can add a little two-row with it or something as you steep it? Or
yeah,
British?
You could do that as well. You know, the flake barley, one of the things that contributes is, you know, mouthfeel and mm-hmm. the beta-glucans and, you know, adds a lot of that.
And you still get that out of steeping?
Yeah, to a certain extent, yeah.
Okay.
And the yeasts on these.
Mm-hmm. What do you use?
I like to use either California ale yeast or an English ale yeast.
Okay.
So, you know, 1056 or 001 and, you know, the British ale yeast or English ale yeast are good.
Well, why not Irish?
You know, a lot of people like the Irish ale yeast, and you can use that, and it can turn out pretty good. But I don't care for that Irish ale yeast. It's just too funky, too flaky for me. It tends to be all over the place and not.
Yeah, I'm Irish,
not stable.
Man.
Well, maybe that's the problem.
That's the problem with me.
Yeah.
Thanks, buddy.
I know some brew pubs that use Irish ale yeast strictly. And you know, if you know how to handle it and it works well for you, you know, give it a go. But you know, I was just reading Design and Great Beers. They Ray says that in the second round of the Nationals, the bulk of the users are using an English ale yeast mm-hmm. rather than the Irish. And I think the you know they all can do a good job. If you're using the English, it's a little less attenuative. You know, you might go with you know, a lower mash temperature a little bit. You know, go to the 152 instead of the 154.
What about fermentation temperature?
Ferment temps, for most of the English ale yeast, the California ale yeast, all that, you're going to be in the 65 to 69 range. So around 67 degrees is ideal.
It's a sweet spot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for all those yeasts, unless you're trying to do something unusual.
Do you want a lot of ester production?
Or no, you don't.
It's really neutral.
Yeah.
So the colder the better, you think?
Dry stout is a pretty clean beer. Well, if it's too cold, you're not going to get, you know, full attenuation. It's going to end up a bit sweet.
Okay. But like 65, 60?
65, 67
okay.
in that range. You know, we're talking about 18 to 19 degrees Celsius.
Okay. Those Australian guys out there.
Yes. For the craft brewers.
I listened to the show.
Not in the United States.
They were bashing lagers, man.
Who is bad? They just bat like lagers in general?
Yeah, they're like, they brew it, you know, to get to your face quick. It's a quick in and out beer. And I was just like,
I think they're just having fun.
Yeah,
I'm having fun. We have
back
fun
now.
on the Sunday show. So I think they're just having a wild time at it. That's all.
Well, they'll be brewing some stouts now, I'm sure. What else? Can you add cocoa to the boil?
Cocoa?
Well, you have this hazelnut porter recipe of yours that has cocoa powder.
Yeah, you could. Chocolate and stouts go together really well. All the dark roasted styles do well with chocolate as an addition. And if you're going to make you know, something like this, this can be a good base beer to experiment with fruits and flavors and spices and stuff. All the roast beers, when done right, you can make them very dessert-like, and desserts and chocolate and desserts and spices, desserts and fruits always go well together. That's why there's, you know, chocolate raspberry cake and stuff like that. You know, think of those foods that you like, the desserts that you like, and marry those flavors. So a raspberry stout or a raspberry cocoa stout.
Well, vanilla.
Vanilla is a good blend as well.
What about adding actual fruit to a stout fermentation?
Sure. So raspberries,
but directly to the fermentation, like raw fruit.
You can.
Okay.
I wouldn't add it real early on because the action of the fermentation will blow off a lot of the aroma of the fruits. Mm-hmm. So as things start to slow down, you add the fruits and it'll pick up again, and you don't want it to totally dissolve all the fruit flavors. If you're going to do something like fruits. Here's another tip for you. Use the canned purees, the Oregon fruit concentrates and all that.
It's like $9 a can.
And they're far better than real fruit because they're consistent as far as how sweet they are, how flavorful they are. They pick some of the best fruits to use in those. And the flavor is very consistent and very good. It's cheaper than fresh fruit and...
Well,
you don't have to worry about
more.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about contamination. You don't have to worry about any of that. And it's far better than the fruit flavorings. Actually, those are not too bad, but they do have a definite taste to them.
Yeah, those are good for like the wheat beers, you know.
Right. You know, and what's interesting, I once did an experiment with whole fruit, the
extract,
the puree
extract,
and the Oregon puree concentrates in the can.
Well, what type of beer do you brew?
It was a robust porter.
Okay.
Which is, you know, I have a very consistent robust porter that I brew. And I took that down to more beer, and Chris and Olin and Regan and, you know, a couple other guys all tasted it. And all of them were able to pick out which was the extract,
really?
Which was the canned Oregon puree, mm-hmm. and which was the real fruit.
No way.
All of them could pick it out.
Wow.
Which,
do you remember what they said about each one? Or
they I said, yeah, how do you know the extract's the extract? And they said, well, it just has that extract flavor. I can mm-hmm. taste it. You know, it's and the difference is it's the extract tends to be more perfumey, more, you know, floral, especially this was in the raspberry extract. Mm-hmm. It tends to just be more artificial
yeah.
in a lot of ways.
Engineered.
The real fruit just tended to lack a lot of the fruit flavors, the richness of the fruit flavors. It tended to be a little more, well, there's the fruit, you know, it's
blah.
Tended to be a little sour this time or whatever.
Right.
And then the canned extract is wide range of the fruit flavors, but very natural.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got the aroma, it's got the deep parts of the fruit, the dark parts, the light parts, everything in between. Really well done.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so if, I know we're kind of getting off on a sidetrack
yeah.
here, but if you're gonna use those fruits, I highly recommend those okay. canned fruits. I think those are some of the best. That really does a good job that way.
Can you recommend an extract recipe
for
dry stout? Yeah,
pale malt extract
okay.
or the English
quantity?
Pale if you can get it. You're gonna have to work these out. I can post something, but. You know, you're going to shoot for, you know, 1040 as your gravity and, you know, 37 IBUs for your hops and, you know, steep, you know, 10% is of your stuff is, you know, your dark grains
mm-hmm.
and go from there. And it works out quite well.
It's like a half a pound of roasted or something. You'd steep?
Yeah, it depends on, you know, the size of the batch and all that.
It's cold steeping. They're asking about cold steeping.
Cold
the grains
steeping.
Too.
Is where you take cold water and you put your roasted grains in that and you leave them like overnight.
Oh, okay.
And the thought is you don't get an astringent a resulting extract from that those grains.
Okay.
Rather than, some people will put them in at the end of the mash
mm-hmm.
and you know to minimize that. And I put it in right at the beginning. I just put all my grains together, grind them up, toss them in the mash tun. Works out quite well. And you know, the dark roasted grains should have some astringency. You should have some, you know, acid from that. And that's part of the character of those dark grains. And cold steeping, if you're trying to get the dark color and some of the chocolate without the real roastiness,
yeah.
then use carafa or something else. There's other ways to do it than the cold steeping. And, you know, a lot of people like the cold steeping. If that works for you, you know, go for it. I just don't think it's really...
So you would say maybe not for your dark grains, but your carafe and things like that, you would do a little cold steep.
They're dark.
Well, I'd use, you know, if you want darkness without the roastiness, use carafe special.
Okay.
You know, the huskless carafe.
Okay.
And that'll do a good job of it.
Okay.
Well, is cold steeping like doing an acid rest?
No, I mean, they're talking cold.
Really cold, like 60 degrees.
Yeah, just
tap
cold,
water.
Cold tap water.
Okay.
You know, and let it sit overnight. You crush it up pretty fine and let it sit up overnight.
Hmm. So if you were doing 5 gallons and you're working with, say, carafe 3, how much carafe are you talking there?
For
5 gallon
carafe,
batch.
Regular carafe.
This is carafe 3 in the husk.
Yeah, if it's with the husk, you treat it just like. You know, carafe 3 is like chocolate malt, I think. You know, it's in the, 400 love range, 350 to 400. Carafe 3, carafe 4 is closer to the roast barley.
Okay.
So, you know, ideally for a dry stout, you want to go roast barley and have that as 10% of your grist. And that's traditional.
Okay.
You know, use something like Pro Mash, and it'll tell you what kind of color you're going to end up with. But it should be black, and you'll get the right amount of flavor if it's about 10%. So you can mix that up with other types of dark roasted grains.
Yeah.
But it's generally about 10% of your grist.
Okay. I got an idea for you. You should do a Pro Mash show. A brief tutorial. I just started using it the other day. Sorry to get you off topic here for a sec, but I just started using it the other day, and a lot of it is fairly straightforward, but there's a lot of tweaking that you have to do, too, that you really kind of need to know what's happening. Mm-hmm. Just a little Pro Mash tutorial would be a sweet segment you could do sometime.
Yeah, you could get Jeffrey Donovan on.
to do it
Sunday
himself.
Show.
It's a good idea. Yeah, because it's just a great program, but it, you know, there's parts if you're a novice that it's a little difficult.
Yeah, I tried once, I gave up. Go figure.
It works out fairly well. It's not too tough. I mean, anybody average intelligence should be able to do it.
Yeah, I'm below average.
I'm out.
Thanks, JC. That's funny. What about you adding your roasted barley to the end of the mash and recirculating for like a half hour over it? So you do your normal mash?
Right, you could do that. Okay. Again, that's what some people do.
Would you have to up your volume just because it hasn't mashed as long, the amount of roasted grain you add into it to get your color?
Yeah, you know, again, the way I do it,
just throw it in.
Grind it all up right. together, get it mixed in there, and it works out quite well.
Okay.
And you want some of those roasty flavors in there. All right, after the break, we're going to open it up to the phone and chat. If you want to call in, it's 1-888-401-BEER, or join us in the chat room for some Q&A. We're talking about dry stouts today. We just finished getting through the recipe formulations.
A little yeast flavor talk here, Jay-Z.
Yeah, let's talk about the yeast a little bit more.
English versus cow ale.
Yeah, we mentioned you could use, you know, the English ale yeast, the cow ale yeast, Irish ale yeast. You could use the Scottish ale yeast, somebody in the chat room was saying.
It's like the Edinburgh.
Yeah, you can. The... If you use the California ale yeast, you're going to end up with a real clean beer. And you're not going to get a whole lot of the esters that are important. Dry stout does not have a lot of fruity ester in it.
Mm.
But it does have some. And if you brew with the California ale yeast, you end up with a real clean beer. And it can turn out real nice. A lot of people do it that way. But it's going to be a little more American in its interpretation. You need a little bit of the esters there. Not overwhelming, but just kind of in the background some esters to kind of marry with the roasted grains and all that and add some of those complex flavors and enhances it. So the English ale yeast is a good choice for that. Irish ale yeast as well.
What type of flavors does the English contribute to a dry stout? Like fruity?
Well, again, you're going to get some, you know, it depends on so many different factors, but you're going to get some peach, or you can get some apple, or you can get some, you know,
apricot
or grape, or, you know, you get some of these esters that can add some fruitiness to it.
Mm-hmm.
The Scottish ale yeast, it'll work as well, but it's going to be not quite as attenuative as well. So I think the English ale yeast is probably, if I had to tell somebody to just pick one to brew it, I'd say English ale yeast would be my number one choice.
Right.
I've got a call or question for you.
Yeah.
We got Ziggy on the line from Mexico. You there, Ziggy?
Yeah, right here.
There you go. Go ahead. You're on the air with Jamil.
Hey, Ziggy.
Hey, Jamil. What's going on, man?
Good job in the Olympics.
No, thank you. Thank you. A little bit of a problem with dismount, but, you know, what am I going to do?
It was a good effort.
It was a quality effort.
All right. I've had this as a problem that I've had using a lot of dark grains, and it shows up in some of my stouts, most of my stouts. It didn't show up in one of my porters, but it showed up in the Imperial stouts and in a couple of the dry stouts I've done. And it's not quite astringency, and it's not quite over-roastiness, but it's this weird dustiness and sort of the finish of the beer. And I find it when I use roast barley a lot. And I sometimes will find it with chocolate. But I don't know exactly where it's coming from. And I've tried to eliminate my water as a source. And regardless of what different water treatments I've used and different types or even different sources of water, I still get this weird sort of dusty, dirty flavor at the end. I don't know what the heck is going on with it.
Dusty, dirty, ash-like, or...
Could be ash-like. Could be described as ash-like.
Because when it gets ash-like, a lot of times that can be a signal of too much of the high roasted grains with not enough sweetness to counter that, to kind of balance it out. You don't want a lot of sweetness in these, But just a hint of sweetness will help reduce some of that ash-like and really high use of roasted grains. The other possibility, I'm not sure what the other possibilities would be. What you need to do is send me some of your beer.
There you go.
It's really hard to do from somebody else's description. But I would wonder if what's your finishing gravity on those?
Well, it depends. I've gone from anywhere from down to like a 1.015 up to a 1.028.
Mm-hmm.
And it still shows up.
You haven't noticed a difference based on that?
Even fortunately, the 1.028 was an Imperial Stout, and that they both had a decent portion of roasted grains, but the Imperial Stout had obviously a much higher proportion and ended up with a lot more unfermentables.
Mm-hmm.
But it also ended up with higher residual sweetness, but I could still taste it pretty evidently, I guess.
Hmm. So you're worrying about the level of minerals in your water. Are you worrying about the level of like fecal coliform? Is that the kind of dirty you're talking, or different
no,
kind of dirty?
No. I'm trying to describe the flavors.
Ziggy, are you using Mexican water?
Not straight out of the
river.
But I am boiling it first.
Okay.
Dirty.
I mean, it's sort of like breathing dust if you've been working outside or if a truck drives by on a dusty road. That's kind of the flavor I'm getting. It's weird.
Just overusing too much?
Yeah, send me a copy of your recipe, and I'll take a look at it and see, what I think, if the roasted grains are too much or not. I would think it might be. What kind of percentages are you doing on the roasted grains?
I tend to cap out about 20 to 25% as the absolute higher.
Yeah, that's really high.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really high. But in an Imperial Stout, there's a lot of it tends to be a lot of sweetness to help carry that, and so you can go to the higher levels. In the lower residual sweetness, smaller beers, you need to scale back the percentage, because again, that sweetness will help turn some of that roast into more of a cocoa-y, chocolatey, cake-like type of thing. Or it's like coffee. When you add sugar to coffee, what happens? It doesn't just become sweet, mm-hmm. but the roast changes mm-hmm. when you do that.
Kind of goes away.
Yeah.
Kind of rounds it out a little.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's why I was saying, maybe it's related to that. It's a very tricky balance. But if you want to send me your recipe, I can take a look at it and I'll send you my recipe in exchange, and we can compare notes and see where the differences lie.
That's great.
I would think that's probably the area that's causing this.
Okay, excellent.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it. And
yeah,
I
hope that helps.
I'll get a couple of those bottles to you.
Oh, sure. Yeah, don't worry about that. But if you can, that'd be great, and we'll try and figure it out for you. But we could probably do it from the recipe.
All right.
Okay, thanks.
Cheers. Thanks a lot, man.
Sounds cool.
All right, I got one more question. It's probably a good one that you can finish up with, if you don't mind. They wanted you to... Daniela wanted me to let you know that she's your biggest fan, by the way. She's in the chat room there. And I was talking to Jamil, not you, John.
Thanks, buddy.
Daniela's great.
They would like you to just kind of give your take on the big three, the Guinness, the Murphy's, and the Beanish, and the Beamish stouts, and what you think about those three in comparison to each other.
They're all different. They're all good. I like the Murphy's better myself. I'm more of a Murphy's man than a Guinness man. But, they're all good. It's one of the things about homebrewing, too. So we talk about this. We talk about brewing to style, and we talk about, the various ranges. And it just goes to show you can have three that are considered fairly classic examples of the style, and, one will be sweeter and less roasty, like the Murphy's versus the Guinness. And, there's a range to these things. So you can brew to style and still have a range and, adjust to your preferences. And, you know, if you don't like it this way, you know, the boundaries are, you know, you can go ahead and brew it a little different that way, or raise it or lower it, and that's one of the cool things. But you know, if you're
it's great about being a home brewer.
Yeah,
freedom.
Exactly. And I like the Murphys. How about you, John? You have a preference?
No, not really. I'm not really a stout fan, actually. I'm a porter fan, though.
Yeah. When it's done well, it's really good. Any beer done well, any style done well,
well,
is good.
It's been rare. I've tried a lot of homebrew stouts, and they're usually too big in flavor. They're over roasty, or it's just not balanced.
Huge alcohol.
Yeah,
and
hot alcohol. Yeah.
And that's more like an imperial stout or something.
The best one I had was Dr. Scott's, and that was served on nitrogen.
Right.
But he had, you know, dry stout, 1045, 1050. It was awesome.
Dry stout should be an easy drinking beer.
Mm-hmm.
And you should be able to down a couple of pints without any problem. So, run that way.
Good show, buddy.
Right. So, stay tuned for a replay of last night's Sunday show with Gino from El Toro Brewing Company. And tomorrow, 10 a.m., listen to one of my favorites, which is the North Queensland Craft Brewer radio program with my buddy Graham Sanders. I really enjoy it. I think you will too.
Yeah, it's a great
tune
show.
In. And thanks. We'll see you in a couple of weeks with Dr. Scott. He's going to be handling whip beers for us while I am out on vacation. And after that, Oktoberfest.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening.
The Jameel Show has been a production of the Brewing Network. Please send questions for Jameel to jameel@thebrewingnetwork.com. The Jameel Show airs live every other Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Brewing Network.